Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connections Thursday edition. Today's date is the 20th day of August 2009. Of course, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and we are here for another important broadcast, another important investigation into how we got to where we are in this world, what it is we are faced with in challenges, and how it is we could possibly understand all the things that are going on around us and better to better prepare for what I believe is going to be a bumpy ride in the future. And interesting that this bumpy ride we're on is not the first time this group has got involved in injuring large numbers of human beings. That is to say, history has proven in my research that this very same group throughout history has involved itself in controlling and manipulating and then fleecing or stealing society's wealth and then imploding those societies for their own gain and then moving on to a new host or a new country. This has happened throughout history, and in fact, I was shocked to find out it happened in prehistory, before the times, the time of Christ and before. So I brought up my resident historian in that area. He's a top-notch researcher, a writer, and just a marvelous man to interview and a good friend. His name is David Pidcock, and I'm going to bring him up right now. David, are you with me?
Yes, I'm with you. I just hope they're not famous last words.
Well, you know, David, the simple truth is, David, we've worked together long enough. I have a very good feel for the depth of your research and knowledge. One of the things I asked you about when I invited you on for the show was we started talking, and I said I was shocked to see how societies and economies have been pumped up, built up, then fleeced and robbed, and then imploded, and this same group seems to have been hovering around those societies in all of the important departments that would be involved in such things. And one example I have here, and I mentioned to you, was the fall of Rome. In fact, Rome was involved with they turned over special privileges to this group and ended up paying the price for it. And this has happened. Happened to many societies. Britain is one of them. In fact, as soon as this group was allowed into Britain, all kinds of problems erupted, both financially and socially, and they were ejected for it. And the things cleared up. So, you want to give us a little history on what you know about these facts?
Well, the history that we've just published is the history of the abuse of money from Plato to NATO and beyond. The title is The Other Road to Serfdom, How Unregulated Capital Caused the Crash of 2008. But if we go back to then the earliest known account of debt cancellation, for instance, this is the lost tradition, the lost history of debt cancellation. If you don't allow debt to be cancelled, then your society automatically self-destructs. Now, you mentioned Rome, but long before Rome, I mean, we go all the way back. The earliest records that we have are cuneiform records from Lagash in Sumeria. Mm. And then Sumeria, of course, present-day Iraq, Mesopotamia. But they had the wisdom then to cancel debt and not allow it to grow. And under the Torah, the Old Testament, debt was cancelled and not allowed to grow. And people amongst the Israelites, and we're talking about a particular group who have a long history of actually contravening the rules that were set for them, as a result of which they destroy themselves, and they destroy the societies in which they become attached. And the reference which I think is really important is one that's in the Quran, which specifically mentions this problem. And it says, and I'll just quote. This is from chapter 4, the women. Because of the wrongdoing of the Jews, we forbade them certain good things that had been allowed to them before, for having frequently debarred people from God's path, and for taking usury, interest, when they had been expressly forbidden from doing so, and because of their devouring people's wealth wrongfully. we have prepared for them a painful punishment. Now, the dispossessing, we have currently made off. We had Robert Maxwell before, Bernie Kornfeld, you know, investors overseas. And all the way through history, we find the same group forbidden to charge interest, to involve themselves in usury and indebtedness, and as a result of which they are destroyed in a series of holocausts that have happened.
Well, didn't Egypt invite them in as managers to the pharaoh, and they became so well positioned that they began, in fact, to draw off all the wealth of the of Egypt, and they were asked, and not they were asked, they were told in no uncertain terms to leave Egypt, and we know that story, but it's often told in a different way because it's the Jews themselves telling the story.
Right. Well. First of all, if we go back to that particular situation, remember that there were 12 tribes of Israel,
yeah.
Not one nation.
Mm-hmm.
The Benjamin and Joseph were from one mother, and Joseph was the other brothers were jealous of him. So what they did, they put him in a well, and the Midianites came, or they sold him into slavery. Joseph then goes to Egypt. He's sold in a marketplace in what we now call modern day Cairo, that he then became a trusted wazir or the head of the treasury, and he had the ability to interpret dreams. So Joseph was highly trusted, and he actually sorted out the granaries and everything, and actually did a fantastic job of organizing. And they had this the 7 year years of famine and the 7 years of plenty, and he saved, and of course he became highly trusted. Then his brothers, who had sold him into slavery, came begging for alms and for food, because the people who were left in Palestine and elsewhere, they were starving. So he recognized them, but they didn't recognize him in his position. And so the point was, he was able then to provide them. They then brought their father Jacob with them, and they then settled in Egypt and became very prosperous. Then again, they reverted to the ways, as the Quran is saying, and the Bible points out, that basically they started to do the things that they become notorious through history for doing, and as a result of which, of course, they became pariahs, and they were enslaved. Moses then relieves them, and he takes them out of Egypt into Arabia, and this is an important thing, that Arabia is really the place of the Bible and everything. So the account is one that we have very clearly in the Bible and in the Quran, but we have actually the artifact and the sites in Arabia where they escaped from Egypt into what we call the Bible land.
Now, was it the chief usurers or the chiefs, the chief rabbis or rebbes of their community that forced them or kept them separate from other communities? My father-in-law grew up in his early part of his life in Algeria. And Algiers, he told me, had a very strict and segregated Jewish quarter where no other Arabs would move to, although they moved in the same circles, in the same souks. They did not socialize. They did business in a very dry fashion. They respected each other's businesses, but they always were kept apart. Now, was that self-imposed, or has that been imposed by their leadership? Or, I mean, why is it that this community, no matter where it is and no matter what group, if it's Sephardic or even Ashkenazi, you find that they either ghettoize themselves or they segregate themselves, and thereby the community itself can be used as a tool for these usurpers and these usurers?
Okay, right. The question is an important one. Remember that Moses, the 12 tribes of Egypt, Moses... he leads the children of Israel across the Gulf of Aqaba into Arabia. He, Midian and everything that we read in Exodus is actually, all the sites are in Arabia, not in Egypt, the southern part of Egypt. And so this brings us to the point about modification and alteration of scripture. But to remain with the subject, the great opponent of Moses, Moses then receives the revelation on Mount Sinai, the Ten Commandments and Deuteronomy and the five books of the Pentateuch, of which, of course, Deuteronomy and Leviticus and other parts prevent the Israelites from charging interest to people in whose lands they sojourned. And that, of course, in Egypt, of course, this led to their enslavement. And then, because if you lend an interest in any society, eventually the interest destroys the society and destroys the perpetrators themselves. Moses' cousin, who was a Levite, is called Korah in the Bible. In the Quran, he's called Karun. Moses brings a prohibition against usury. Korah, who had traveled with the Pharaoh's pension fund, like Madoff, he made off with the pension fund. Mm. He took all the gold and silver and everything with him. And he opposes Moses. Now, there's a massive confrontation. He's ordered to relinquish his bad habits, then he creates a rebellion. You know, this is the rebellion against Moses. As a result of which, there's a massive earthquake, and all the ones who are in the camp of Korah at the foot of Mount Sinai, the earth opens up, and I think there are 250 of him and the first, let's say, stock exchange group. Or the Schlock Exchange, let's say, they all vanish into the pit. And the earthquake swallows them up. So this was the punishment against the Israelites for charging, for resisting the prohibition of interest. So it is he was an Israelite, one of the 12 tribes, and the cousin of Moses. And this has been the battle throughout history. Christianity and Islam, latter-day things, all the Muslims and the Christians, basically, with a few exceptions, have fallen into the same trap. So they're as guilty as the Jews in this particular instance.
Well, now, but again, going back to the prior question about the segregation of this group, even though we know that they do business with non-Jews and they leave their enclave daily or whenever needed, they always return to the confines of this enclave.
Yes.
and stay apart from. And is that something that is integral to their success?
Well, look. First of all, as I've mentioned before, my cousin converted to Judaism. I converted to Islam, so we do have a long weekend. Now, the point is that there are good Jews and bad Jews, as there are good Muslims and good Christians and bad Muslims. Mm. But the point is that they were not encouraged, or they refused, as the Quran says, they hindered people from God's way. They were given the message. Their duty was to propagate the message and to liberate people from the things such as usury. But they then formed into a clique and refused to admit people into their cabal because it meant that they could lend to them at interest. Because remember, Saint Jerome points out in his definition of Deuteronomy 18 the children of Israel could only lend at interest to a people who it would not otherwise be a crime to kill. So they couldn't lend to the Egyptians, they couldn't lend to the Arabs in whose community they lived. They could only lend to those who they were allowed to kill in terms of they were the people who were oppressing them. But they've made the whole thing into a scandal. And they, instead of inviting the whole world to join them, they have kept apart so they can exploit in a parasitical way the rest of society.
Well, that's an interesting point you made, David, because now they've broadened their description of who they're willing to kill by simply stating that everyone other than a Jew is cattle, and now that definition permits them to permit usury against all groups. It doesn't matter if they're at war with them or not.
Correct.
And there, now, is this was this a rabbinical change in their thinking? Because this was not scriptural. It was rabbinical, wasn't it?
For certain. It was the, as the, we have what we call now today in the Islamic community, scholars for dollars. This was scholars for shekels. I mean, this has been the, but it is the perennial problem. This is our trial for our generation. It's no different if we accept that there will be a reckoning. Each society and each generation must be tested as those before them were tested. And this is the perennial test for humanity. And as you know, the point being that, as they said, the genius of Satan is convincing half the world he doesn't exist and the other half are not following him. But in this case, this is purely a device to justify something that is totally unjustifiable under the Torah. But it is an interpretation, like the Talmud, the Tafsir, the interpretation suits a certain group within society, like the gold standard suits a certain bunch of people. So you can get rules and regulations passed that satisfy your particular requirements.
I have a I'd like to read something to you, David, and get your take on this. It's a short statement here. It says, why are the Jews hated? It is the inevitable result of their laws. They either have to conquer everybody or be hated by the whole human race. The Jewish nation dares to display an irreconcilable hatred toward all nations and revolts against all masters. Always superstitious, always greedy for the well-being enjoyed by others, always barbarous, cringing in it, misfortune and insolent in prosperity. You seem to me to be the maddest of the lot. The Kaffirs, the hot tots, the Negroids of Guinea are much more reasonable and honest people than your ancestors, the Jews. You have surpassed all nations in pertinent fables, in bad conduct, and in barbarism. You deserve to be punished, for this is your destiny. Now, this was written by, of course, the great bard of France, Voltaire. And it's interesting that the sentiments that he echoes in that statement transcend time, as does the experience of the British bard Shakespeare in his portrayal of the Jew in, of course, the mentioned Merchant of Venice.
Yes.
So what we see in both instances, regardless of the period, of course, Shakespeare was a couple hundred years before Voltaire, and then, of course, Voltaire's generation was experiencing the identical savagery and criminality that we are experiencing now.
Yes, because there are promises in Scripture, and also you mentioned Shakespeare. If you read King Lear as well, you'll find that the usurer hangs the cozener. The petty thief is hanged by the man who has driven him into crime. So it is a long running problem. It's there's a marvelous book, The Lost Tradition of Biblical Debt Cancellation, and all societies have to go back to understanding that you cannot have peace in any society, whether you are believers, you fast every day, or you pray 10 times a day. The barakah, the blessing, leaves every society, and this has been known all the way through history. You know, you can read Plato and Aristotle. They say that usury divides society against itself. So what we have to realize is that we are also the architects of our own difficulties. That once we allow people to Northern Rock or any of the banks, and remember that the English Civil War, we had 500 years when the usurers, in the guise of Shylock and Co., were kept out of England, and then we had 500 years of relative peace and tranquility. The English Civil War was to bring back the usurers, to make it usurer-friendly again.
Yes.
And Cromwell was their man, and Cromwell, who is if we go to the House of Commons in London, we find him standing in front of the building. Now, the whole thing, as Lord Clarendon pointed out at the time, and it's in the book I mentioned, the history, Lord Clarendon said, since Cromwell's time, we have been surrounded by a tribe of bankers that were not seen until the present troubles. So the game was that he was their man, and we had the Civil War. They chopped off the king's head. This brought the Bank of England into being in 1694, and it's been downhill ever since.
Well, and wasn't it, but after Charles I was beheaded, didn't Cromwell get upstage sometime after that, and Charles II was put in, but he was weak and unable?
Yes, it was called the Restoration, but it only restored the bank back to the usurers. And then remember that the British people were then saddled with this monumental problem of a national debt.
Yeah.
And the money was loaned by the Rabbinical Bank, the Wiesel Bank in Amsterdam, and the terms were charged on the British people at 6/8% till the Day of Judgment. And so this was the deal. This was how Britain became then the pariah it became, having to steal the rest of the world to satisfy usurers in the City of London. Interesting that the Queen nor the Prime Minister can enter the City of London without an invitation from the Lord Mayor. So the power of the City of London over Westminster, as Gladstone points out, and we find this all the way through the battles with the Bank of England. Gladstone found himself in office but not in power. And Lord Acton points out that power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But the bit they don't add on is that he said the issue which has swept down the centuries and must be fought sooner or later is the people versus the banks.
Well, it's interesting that the last conversation about two conversations ago with Mohammed Rafiq, he made the point that what usury does is forces every new generation to pay for assets that have already been paid for.
Right.
So what you've got here is, in the American experience or the British experience, is we keep paying for our roads, houses, cars, and everything that we've accumulated over and over again.
Over again, yes. And this is the great scam, the great con. And remember this issue of indebtedness, this goes to the heart of the thing with Lagash in Samaria. They had the wisdom to cancel debt. And this issue of repaying and repaying and repaying is the basis of all the conflict that we've seen through the last 5,000 years. There's been no peace because of this particular problem.
Yep.
And Mohammed Rafiq is absolutely right. Just an interesting point. I was sent something. I have the front page of the. We did a House of Lords presentation on this indebtedness a month or so ago. This was actually, and this was on the front page of the Daily Mirror, July 6th, 2009, and Michael Jackson killed by $400 million of debt. You know, his friend, the Incredible Hulk, said that frantic thing to actually run so many of these concerts in London were the fact that he owed over $400 million in debt, and that's what he's saying is it was the real cause of his death. So debt is a killer. And Imam Ali, the cousin of the Prophet Muhammad, said we withstood the weight of the iron, the stone, and the whip, but couldn't endure the burden of debt. And the great president, of course, Jefferson, said, the modern theory for the perpetuation of debt has drenched the earth with blood and crushes its inhabitants under burdens ever accumulating. So this issue of debt is the one that we have to actually realize. It is destroying us. And World War III is an inevitability unless we actually change the system of debt and compound interest.
Well, now, David, you know, one of the things that I have discovered in my research, and you know that I have over 40 famous books from The Waters Flowing Eastward to Douglas Reed. I've read them all, and what I have seen from my reading and what I've understood from my reading is that the lieutenants in this are not necessarily Jews, the lieutenants in the conspiracy. They could be Christians or even people of
Many Muslims are actually fully immersed in this.
Right, but at the top, at the very pinnacle of this crime gang, I find it's an exclusively Jewish club in my research. That's what I find when I get beyond the people you can notice in their machinations. In other words, I'll give you an example. They're always claiming in America that the richest man is this guy from Berkshire Hathaway, Buffett. Yeah. Now, the fact is, there are people in America with far more resources and money than he. And if you come to Europe, they never mention the Rothschild family as having huge sums of money, nor do they mention Oppenheimer or Warburg. Or, when you go through the list of very powerful people like Brothman and the rest, these people have money beyond the people you see listed in Forbes magazine. And the simple truth of the matter is they happen to all be Jewish, and they happen to be a step above the people I'm talking about right now. These people don't go to work every day. They are working every day. They don't go to work. They just are working. They're working in their devious decision-making and implosions of places and corruptions and so forth. Now, am I right in saying that the very top of this is almost exclusively Jewish-based?
Well, I would think that is the general understanding, but there are, as the Quran says, amongst them are people who are, if you trust them, they are trustworthy. So, but it is those who manage to, like the Masonic, as the Quran says also, there is no good in all their secret meetings except in those which they planned good for society and humanity. So there are but it is the nature, the fact that the power is in the money, and those who like Madoff and the groups through history have the cumulative wisdom and knowledge of how this system works. Well, and as the Quran says, it is their it is the system that they have developed, and this is why they've been pursued throughout history, because they have broken the commandments.
Well, but we see people like Adnan Khashoggi, we see people like Onassis, we see people like the blacks over in Canada. It doesn't matter who you talk about. You see a crime always following closely behind. In the example of Onassis, of course, he was involved in many of the Greek uprisings throughout the 60s and 70s, and a lot of his money was involved in that. But he also married the wife of Kennedy, who, by all accounts, it was Jewish, from Jewish heritage. Now, it's almost like a Queen Esther marrying her way into the top of the pile there. And I know the Jews have often said in literature that her real first marriage was to Onassis, because he was the first Jew she ever married.
I see. Well, the bit that I thought was interesting, just as an aside on that, when they had the big conference, not a big conference, it was David Frost was interviewing the head of Pravda and TASS and Reuters in New York, and the question was what if, for instance, if Khrushchev had been assassinated and not Kennedy, and the head of Pravda said, well, one thing is for certain, he said, Aristotle Onassis would never have married Mrs. Khrushchev. So the point is that we have to have a bit of humor in this. You know, we put fun into fundamentalism, but the point is that they were the Jews were the chosen people. For sure, they were chosen above all other nations to be a light and a guide for humanity. Therefore, when they are good, they're above the angels. When they're bad, they're worse than devils. So the point is, you will find the most capable from that community.